Hello, you're listening to Spoiler
Build
Film
Conversation.
Hooray!
Yay.
Hooray.
It's that time again, guys. Podcast time. And I'm Richard Nicholas. Hello. With me to make a podcast is Anthony Evans.
How's it going?
Jamie Thomas.
Hiya.
Hi. And Abigail Bain.
Hello.
So if you don't know, this is a film podcast. We all talk about a film, and it's sort of a review, but it's much more casual than that. Though there's a format. We'll get to it. Anyway, what is the film this week? And it was Abby's pick, so she'll tell us.
This week's film was Leon, sometimes known as Leon the Professional or just The Professional, from 1994. It was written and directed by Luc Besson, starred Jean Reno, Gary Oldman, Natalie Portman, and there are a few other people in there as well that we might mention later.
What is it about? What does IMDb think it's about?
Matilda, a 12-year-old girl, is reluctantly taken in by Leon, a professional assassin, after her family is murdered. Leon and Matilda form an unusual relationship, and she becomes his protege and learns the assassin's trade.
Oh, that's already a bit spoilerific.
It is a bit
I like the idea of assassin the trade, like learning to be a
spoilerific.
plumber.
Well, they do. She's supposed to be learning to be a cleaner. They keep saying cleaner and not clarifying that that means murderer. So I did half expect her to become a cleaner, and then she does do. There is in the training montage to become an assassin. She does do some cleaning. I think she washes his windows and stuff. So I thought it was a bit confusing to refer to them as cleaners. Nothing clean about murder, unless you do it very precisely. No, it's messy. It's a messy business, and it is in this film. Anyway, Abby, why did you pick Leon? Which is what we're gonna. It's that in Europe, I think it's mostly referred to as Leon. I think it might be the professional in America, but we'll refer to
It's
it as Leon.
it is it is both in America. It is Leon the Professional.
So awkward. Yeah. He is a pro. I mean, I don't know the profession inside out myself, but he seems quite good at it, doesn't he? But
In answer to your question, Richard,
thank you.
I chose Leon because I really felt like doing a film by Luc Besson. And it's just something about Luc Besson's flavour. I really felt like just these improperly socialised people in weird situations.
You're thinking of what as an example of an improperly socialized people.
Well, in this particular case, you get a sense that he's always been a little bit strange, but he has seemingly spent a protracted period on his own.
Are we talking about Luc Besson, or are we talking about the character
Leon.
Leon?
The
Right.
character Leon has he spent too much time on his own, and he's gone a bit weird.
He is a weird guy, and like in other Luc Besson films, like Fifth Element, he has weird characters who are either aliens, like in Fifth Element, or I guess in Nikita, she's got her own issues. So it's not just competent anti-heroes. It's what's wrong with these people, like kind of characters that he seems to like. So you picked it to share some Luc Besson. And we've received it, but what were we expecting from Leon, other people on the podcast? Anthony, had you seen Leon before? And before you'd seen it, if you had, what did you think you were in for?
I have seen this film several times, but I chose to watch the director's cut, which I've never seen before. So yeah, it's a good film, obviously. I've seen it four times, so there's that. I think the first time I can't remember because it was so long ago, I suppose. But I don't know. I've just always liked this film, so just coming in this time is just like, oh yeah, this is a good choice. I'll be happy.
So not an unknown quantity for you, neither me. I'd seen it before. It was one of the first crime DVDs I bought, and kind of when I started getting into crime as a genre, when you sort of turn from being 10 and watching exclusively cartoons to like starting to look into. It seems odd to say adult cinema, but like
Well,
films for over the age of 15.
whenever you, I, whenever most like younger people make that jump, it's always an extreme jump. Like they're watching Disney films and then they go, well, now is the, you know, I'm in double figures now, I should watch something a bit more mature, and they just watch like Pulp Fiction or something. Yeah. Dive in. Don't no baby steps.
I think the gateway into watching 18 certificate films is stuff like Terminator, because it's got there was lots of action figures for Terminator when I was a kid, and like the cyborg dude looks kind of cool to 10-year-olds or 12-year-olds or whatever. So you kind of start watching movies your dad might watch, and a lot of people are into Terminator and things, scaring yourself. For me, Leon was a kind of early, ooh, what's this strange genre about criminals who are also the good guys? Like kind of like anti-heroes and crime. So it was an early one for me to start getting into the genre that is crime. So I've always kind of known it as well. So I don't know what I would have expected the first time either. What about you, Jamie?
It was one of those films that, because the first Luc Besson film I saw was The Fifth Element, which I've seen a million times. And I really liked when I was about 14. I have a slightly harder time with it now, but I do still enjoy it just because it's fun and it's colourful. And for some nostalgia. And I quite like his style, although he's not the best storyteller. I like his visual flair. To me, he's kind of like, he sort of reminds me of Jean-Pierre Jeunet, the guy who made Delicatessen, Amelie.
Yeah. His fellow Frenchman as well. So the French perhaps have their own way of doing things.
I think I have a harder time with Jeunet because he's a bit too twee and whimsical.
He's trying to very much circle the hipster market.
Yeah, whereas Luc Besson is a similar style but a little bit more palatable for me. It's not quite so Terry Gilliam.
He's more in the direction. He's more in the direction of people like Tarantino, isn't he?
He Sam Raimi, that kind of colourful comic book style, but he's pretty unique. And I'd always I'd seen and heard about Leon forever because I used to read like movie magazines and stuff when I was younger, and whenever they did a yearly, I was probably monthly, top 100 films of all time, you know, when everyone stopped buying their magazines, so they had to renew their readership. Leon was always in usually the top 20. And I'd always read about it and get curious, but for some reason just never watched it. And then it was never on Netflix in the UK for some reason. Right. I could never find it. So I finally watched it just a few weeks ago. And I think I was actually expecting something more, something darker and not quite as funny as it was. Like funny in a endearing kind of way.
Sure.
I wasn't expecting Leon to be the character he was. I wasn't expecting him to be so childlike. And that's one of the parts of the film that I like that we'll get into later is that a lot of the times he is like a child.
Mm. Despite being this professional hitman who's miraculously good at killing people. But sometimes he seems to do it with just the edit and he's magically got somewhere else.
Yeah, but he's like the drinking milk stuff, and he's very innocent and it's interesting because he's such a, you know, his job is he kills people.
So nice contrast.
Yeah, and I think I was expecting something darker.
Yeah.
And I think I was actually pleased that it went against my expectations. Not that I wouldn't have enjoyed it, but I enjoyed it more because it actually turned out to be a bit more endearing than I thought it was going to be.
Hmm. Okay, so
I will say, coming from that, I don't know if any of you watched the director's cut. Anyone?
I don't think it was.
No.
Yeah, I'm guessing you didn't, Jamie, because the stuff that was added was probably the darker stuff that you were expecting.
Yeah, was that the because there's a suggestion that I've heard of in the director's cut that there's a physical relationship between him and Matilda.
Yeah, I'd say the two kind of main changes were there's a lot more kind of that horrible sexual tension between them.
Yeah.
There's that, and then the second one is she's a lot more complicit in some of the activities that are going on.
Yeah. It was one of the things that I think the version that I saw, which I guess is the regular cut, was it already had enough of that kind of stuff with her that I kind of felt it's sexualized her too much, a little bit too much for me. Like, it creeped me out.
And this is, Natalie Portman pre adulthood, so it's not right. Whereas now it's perfectly, Natalie Portman.
I think she was 12 in Leon, and it is. It's a bit uncomfortable to watch sometimes where they there's nothing graphic in it or anything. They put her across as more mature, but they don't do it in a way that like Taxi Driver does it with
Jodie Foster.
Where it's kind of tragic. Whereas here in Leon, they almost play it as a will they won't they thing between this 40-year-old man child and a 12-year-old girl.
Here's the thing: it sounds kind of terrible, but the film doesn't present it. Maybe in the director's cut a bit more, but it doesn't present us with a really horrible creep who starts a relationship with a 12-year-old.
That's the thing. It's almost as if she's preying on him.
Yeah,
yeah.
He comes across as the innocent one who's being, groomed by a 12-year-old girl. I don't know how else to put that.
Yeah. Well, the way I took it is she is young and probably, coming into puberty as a character, and therefore she has these strange feelings. It's the first person in her life as a character that's been nice to her, and she could be like a father figure initially, but she falls in love with him, at least that's how she articulates it. And in the non-director's cut, it only ever implies that it's one way. Like, she's in love with him and he likes her and is friendly, but is not quite father figure, not quite romantically involved. But he does say he loves her, but in a kind of, he started to live his life a bit with her. Like, whereas pre-meeting this young woman, he sort of lived this bizarre life that is that of someone mentally handicapped and sort of strange. Like, should we go back to pre-Natalie Portman? Like, what is Leon like before he's embroiled in her life?
He's very set in his routine, which I thought was nice. And he has his plant, his only friend.
His potted plant, which is key, because he relates to it, because it doesn't have roots, as he says. It doesn't, get to, grow bigger and bigger. It can be moved anywhere, and it's a story about a hitman who essentially lives in a crummy looking apartment, sleeps with sitting in a chair because he's sort of paranoid he might get killed or something, or ready for anything. Kind of sits, sunglasses on in the dark in a chair like a creep, and he drinks milk. That's one of his hobbies at that point. He has a plant, and we later find out he works for the mafia as a hitman. And that the mafia guy who gives him his missions or whatever keeps his money for him and sort of doles it out to him. But it's kind of strange. In one of my, in the first few watches, I didn't get some of the subtext. Like, and part of it is this mafia guy who lives and works in a deli, as far as we can tell, or an Italian restaurant or something, he has been helping Leon live in America, set him up as a hitman, and has had some, interference with Leon's living there, but essentially controls his money and perception of how to do business.
I want to mention here, because no one else has, this guy is played by Danny Aiello, who is one of the best flip-flop, can play a very, very nice man or an absolutely horrible person.
Yes.
It works well for this film as well, because sometimes he's like a nice guy, and sometimes it seems like, oh, maybe he's a bit of a sinister character.
This film's actually the perfect example of it, because I think the first film I saw him in that I knew that's Danny Aiello was Jacob's Ladder, where he plays an angel, basically. And then I saw him in Once Upon a Time in America, where he's a crooked cop having sex with underage girls.
Charming.
Funnily enough, called Officer Aiello for not on purpose. That's just his character's name. That's like two completely different characters. And then in this, it's both at the same time, because he comes across as sinister and like he's messing with Leon and like. But as the film goes on, it kind of turns out that he actually is looking after him.
Yeah, it's odd because we establish slowly that Leon isn't just a cold-hearted assassin. He's possibly some type of mentally ill man. He's sort of, he's a slow guy, and he's got this one skill set that he's got for whatever reason. He's an assassin, and he kind of lives this odd life, but you can't quite tell if the guy who's giving him jobs is looking out for him and is therefore giving him the money slowly to be, look after him, or is kind of conning him into... He basically has an elite hitman that's very cheap and very agreeable to everything. Well, Abby, what did you make of this relationship of the mafia guy and Leon?
And that's the thing. You got a sense every so often that maybe he was going to betray him. But there's nothing about the situation that unfolds that suggested that he did.
He did actually betray him in the end, but then he really didn't have a choice.
Gary Oldman, who plays the main villain of the piece, forces this Italian mafia guy to he basically forces him to say where Leon is staying, and he also we're shown that he got at least beaten up. He didn't just give the information, but he was the kind of character you think could have perhaps leaned on Gary Oldman a bit more if
I didn't think he knew where they were.
I think it was implied that he had to have been the one to have told them. It's quite an interesting scene because it's like a children's birthday party in the Italian mafia guy's restaurant, and then Gary Oldman comes in with all of his agents and leans on this guy and is disrespectful. And this guy's a mafia guy, so it's sort of implied he wouldn't like this happening. You've kind of come into my house and you've made a situation that should be nice awkward, and you've intimidated me. So it's not someone who would easily give in to this corrupt cop. But he obviously must have, because a SWAT team arrives to take down Leon at the end. So I think he does betray him, but it's implied that he maybe didn't want to. And then also he's willing to do what Leon wants. It comes across like he's maybe manipulating Leon.
He's not a good character, but he's also not one dimensional. Oh, I betrayed him. He has, he's involved in the ending as well with Matilda and the money.
Yeah, it's kind of like he's willing to pay out to his hitman and do what Leon requests with his money. But he also comes across like, well, maybe he's got a self-interested mafia guy who wants to keep him off his money.
He's a dick.
He's cheap.
But at the same time, there is something to him. I think that's one of the things about this, one of the strengths of this film, is the Leon and Matilda and Tony, is that character's name, have really proper depth to them. And they... Leon and Matilda in particular, their individual arcs and together is really nicely done. And then you've got Gary Oldman, who is so fantastically one-dimensional in just how awful he is as a person.
Yeah.
And what I loved about that was it's not revealed until a significant way in that he's actually a DEA agent?
He's definitely a police officer, higher police.
Yeah, I don't think they're specific in what he does exactly.
Yeah, he's kind of a DEA agent, sort of.
It's weird, because all of his men are maybe police officers, but they're dressed so weirdly and like criminals. They might be undercover cops, or they could... You don't really get a full picture, but they seem to work in the police station, all these weird gangsters he hires.
He's like a hypothetical, as if someone went, somewhere in the world out there is the worst policeman, and that's who he plays.
It's kind of incredible. And he enjoys himself. It's not just he's corrupt. Yeah. He seems corrupt for fun, and because he's a psychopath, and maybe because of the pills he's on. He has a strange ritual of I mean, it's actually a lot of the characters, you know, we don't get a lot of their actual back history. We get a hint at them through the movie. But like Leon, we don't know why he came to Italy. We don't know if he is mentally challenged or if he's just if it's because of his job being so weird or because of his mental condition anyway. If it's just partly being a foreigner, you know,
everything about them is suggested. Yeah. Very little is told, which is is nice because they still have all that depth. And a lot of it comes from, all the little tics that they have, like Leon drinking milk and looking after the plant, or Gary Oldman and his odd ritual with the pills.
He takes these little pills, the green and yellow pills, and he does what looks like the most enjoyable stretch. There's a nice, crick your back, twist your neck, like bite down on the pill. And then he has a kind of little shudder and weird noise he makes as he enjoys the effect of this pill. Then he's like ready for slaughtering people.
Yeah,
as part of his criminal career.
He bites down on the pill and then he has this little like piss shiver when like the last of it. It's that's it. Yeah,
I guess it is like that. Yeah, and this is the weird thing with Gary Oldman's character. We know he's a cop. We know he's corrupt. We know he has links to the drug business. But that's all. We know he has control within the police, corrupt police. Or, you know, he has control over some corrupt police officers. But we don't know what his motivation is. We know he's a crazy guy who gets a thrill out of listening to classical music and killing halfway innocent people. And it's all a bit, that's all we know. And that he's just pure bad cop. And, Gary Oldman enjoys the role, it seems. Yeah.
That's the thing, like, one of the things I like that differentiates Leon from the other guys is that Leon has a code and the other guys don't. So it's not so much that, like, Leon objects to them killing, it's that he objects to them breaking the rules.
Yeah.
Well, the rule is no women and children. A little bit sexist. Children, obviously, mostly innocent. That's acceptable. But women are capable of crimes as well and might deserve to have some repercussions. But, you know, it's basically the world of crime, organised crime, is a man's world and they deserve to die, perhaps, or maybe they don't. It doesn't matter. But women and children should be spared.
Well,
and that makes him slightly better than Gary Oldman as a criminal.
I think the idea is that the men signed up for the life.
Yeah.
Whereas the women, like, some of them sign up for the life, but a lot of them don't even know that that's the life that's happening.
Sure.
Yeah, it's a very common trope in films like this, as well as, you know, there's a code of honour, like honour amongst thieves and all that kind of thing.
It's all part of the criminal game. You're all, you know, anyone could die at any time, or, you know, it's all fair game, except, you know, let the innocent people go, if people are innocent, leave them out of it. And that's kind of the idea. And Gary Oldman isn't just your conventional, like, corrupt cop. He's properly meant to be this psychopath who kills. I mean, the main crime that sets up the chain of events is that Gary Oldman's guys are leaning on this guy who lives in Leon's apartment. And he's a bit of a deadbeat dad. And he's been doing, like, he's part of the cocaine deals that Gary Oldman's involved with. He's been cutting the cocaine and keeping some for himself as to make profit. And Gary Oldman knows he's lying because he smells him. Gary Oldman is called in to smell the guy to see if he's lying. And he decides he isn't lying, but he's got a time limit. And basically, this deadbeat dad is Matilda's father. And he is they have a kind of horrible just family life together.
Yeah.
There's a young innocent brother. There's an annoying, obnoxious sister who seems to like doing aerobics, watching TV, and a mum who's not very nice and a bit, you know, tarty and dislikable. And what's nice is it's kind of a parallel to the Roald Dahl film Matilda, isn't it?
What, where the mum's a hooker, and then
well, the kid's called Matilda. She hates her obnoxious family, and she gets to go and live with a very nice teacher. This Matilda gets to, you know, be with a mentally weird assassin. But I think there's a parallel to the film.
Yeah, it's kind of, I guess.
Same name.
It's reaching, maybe.
Shut up. It's Matilda. Her name's Matilda. She has a horrible family of jerks who don't care about her. That's exactly the same.
Her dad is technically a criminal, and her mum could be described as trashy.
Yes.
And she is very precocious.
Quite.
Yes, it's a Roald Dahl film.
It's just somehow a little darker.
Actually, I don't know. I would say most of Roald Dahl's work is probably darker than this film.
There is that bit in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory where Gene Wilder starts taking out all the kids with shotguns, isn't it? There is that bit.
May as well have.
He doesn't really care about Augustus Gloop drowning, does he?
If anything, that would have been more merciful to the children in that film than what actually happens to them.
Okay, so it's as sinister as the Roald Dahl films and books, indeed. But anyway, like the whole chain of events at the start is to do with this drug deal where the guy is basically this Matilda's dad has made the mistake of betraying Gary Oldman, who is a horrible, 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 horrible man. And Gary Oldman's like, I gave you till 1 minute past the time I said, and now I'm going to listen to classical music and murder you and your family. And, basically, it gets worse because children get killed. We don't know if they would have killed them, but the silly Rastafarian white guy, he's not paying attention.
Who I really got confused, because I thought, like, Gary Oldman had stumbled in from True Romance.
Yeah. It is a lot like that. Yeah, he's a very strange character in True Romance as well. Mm-hmm. Gosh, yeah. Anyway. Children get killed. Matilda luckily is buying milk for her quirky neighbour, who she has taken a liking to. He's polite and nice, and her family are all jerks. And essentially, because she's off buying milk, she misses the massacre and has a lucky escape going to Leon's apartment, which is a bit further away from her apartment. And he eventually lets her in after deciding he's not that evil and cruel. Leon lets her in and they start their bond, which is kind of what the movie's built on, is this bizarre relationship between a child who is now orphaned and a hitman who is a big
basically
fan
a
of
child.
Milk. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Milk drinking simpleton.
Yeah, and it all comes off that scene, which is probably the strongest scene in the movie, because it's very tense. Mm. And the action is very in your face. And
visceral,
shocking and visceral, yeah. And it really, by this point in the film, you're really immersed. I find
it's a great setup as well to just make you completely unsympathetic with Gary Oldman's character.
Mm.
He came in and he just killed an entire family, children as well, like just murdered everyone, and then went yay.
Well,
like that's basically his whole character. He just goes wee and like just kills people.
And he's a bit miffed because his suit and possibly his arm has got a bit ruined by a stray bullet from the dad who has a shotgun.
It's on top of the fact that he just kills whoever and doesn't care, and he's jittery and kind of sweaty, and he's gross.
What's interesting as well is when the non-corrupt police investigate this bloodbath at what should have been... Like, it's a murder that doesn't make sense. It's a massacre in a situation where you should have had policemen investigating a crime. And it's like there's been, like, multiple shots into the corpse of the dad. And it's like the regular police are investigating. And Gary Oldman's way of getting out of it is basically going, oh, I lost a guy! What's with the questions?
Yeah.
What do you mean you're investigating? I'm a cop, aren't I? Get out of my face.
How does he still have a job? at this point in his career, if this is how he does it, how have the police force not just gone, why don't you just fuck off? You are a terrible policeman.
Yeah, Eternal Affairs in this film are terrible at investigating themselves.
You don't get anything done, and whenever you don't manage it, you just kill everyone.
And you have a load of undercover cops who work for Gary Oldman who seemingly just turn up at the office, put their feet up, and do nothing.
Yeah.
See, you say that about him, that all he does is show up and kill people. But think about all of the good cops in action movies. They're doing the exact same thing.
It's true. And they're, you know, not profiteering from selling cocaine, I guess, is the plus point.
He's doing it so brazenly, it's as if, to the police force, no, he's just also a criminal.
Yeah. Who knows? We know that there's a lot of cops who are on the take from Gary Oldman because there's a lot of people he can boss about within SWAT teams and within undercover guys and stuff.
An obscene number of people.
Yeah, I like his sidekick. The main henchman he has is quite competent and always seems to be calming down Gary because he knows Gary Oldman's character is a nut job, and he's like, "No, come away! Don't kill the people again." Out of the corridor, don't kill the old lady who's going to possibly report us to the regular police. Calm down. That's it. I will now go and do proper, easy-to-do crime. You just stay here and don't kill any more innocent people.
Yeah, I like that he has a handler.
Yeah. And all of his henchmen are kind of on edge that they might be killed by him at any given moment. And yet they go along with it. What's interesting is Gary Oldman kills all these people, but Leon, we have seen, take down a room full of henchmen and a kind of fat guy who won't work with the mafia or pay off the mafia. And essentially the first hit Leon has, he teleports around this apartment, killing everyone in brutal ways, climbing out of vents, hiding in the darkness and stuff. Quite epic. It's a man killing lots of people, only they're bad guys. And these other ones are just, you know, jerkish family members. So they set up these two kind of polar opposite murderers against each other and then add into the mix young Natalie Portman, who's having strange feelings because she wants a father and a lover and a protector. It's odd. And this is what we were trying to get to talk about, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely... I think their relationship is... It's at the same time kind of sweet and fun, like, to watch, but also it's challenging. Like, there are times when you feel uncomfortable watching it. And what I like about it is that he's never preying on her.
No.
Well, no, at least not in the theatrical cut. I don't know about the director's cut.
He is never the one who is, like, implicit in anything. It's always Natalie Portman's character.
Yeah, and he keeps a distance, and he's like, you know, no.
Yeah, in a way, he's trying his best, because he's not ever had a child, it's implied, and he knows how to deal with children a bit, because the first thing he does when this young girl has lost all of her family members, who she doesn't like, but is still sad about, is, I'm going to prove I have a pig in the kitchen. Shut up, mate. You don't have a pig in the kitchen. I was literally just in there. Oh, it's an oven glove with a pig's face. Oink, oink, oink. And it's like he's sticking around with this pig oven glove to entertain her. And you go,
A weird moment with that where I was like, because you're French, really?
Yeah. French playing Italian.
It's like, was this whole pig thing your idea? Because we have that same shared cultural history of, like, pig ownership. And... Yeah. It was like, did you bring this? It's John Renault.
It was a very European bit of comedy.
Yeah. I've got a pig in the kitchen, and now I'm going to come out and oink at you with my glove on.
But it was also a nice reminder that she's a child.
Yeah. Also, and I don't think he wanted. He didn't want to cope with the reality as well. He probably wanted to not be talking about the dead family.
Yeah. Because he does keep a distance from his own work.
Yeah,
that's why, you know, the professional and the whole thing is, it is a job, and he doesn't get in. That's why he doesn't want to get involved in her, and he doesn't want to think about her dead family, because he doesn't want to get emotionally invested in anything he does, because what he does is so awful.
Because he's watching through the, like, people he has at his door, what's going on, because he realizes he's astute as an assassin. He knows something's gone down, but he doesn't intervene and say, "Oh, do you know what? I don't want to let my neighbours be killed." He doesn't stop anything. And he only gets involved at the very last minute and lets her in.
Also, like, that might have something to do with this, with the kind of, like, childlike aspect of him, is that he deliberately maintains it in order to keep a distance. Well, he doesn't let himself become emotionally mature enough to be affected by what he has to do.
Well, it feeds into this idea that maybe he's a bit the way he is because of what he does for a living. Maybe it's jaded him and it's made him into quite a strange guy who's quite innocent, who likes drinking milk, going to see roller skating musicals.
Yeah.
Not Xanadu. One of the better original ones with, like, Fred Astaire or someone. But he likes, you know, he has a kind of gleeful look when he's in the cinema like a child, and he's very much a childlike man, which brings him down to her age. And because she's quite mature for her age, she smokes, she's quite cynical, she skips school and is having a tough time. They kind of meet, you know, in a sense, her, she's mature, he's held back a bit mentally. So they kind of meet up, which makes the romance that might get slightly implied at times make sense. But I never think they crossed the line. I don't think it was ever, this guy's a paedophile.
No, because, they don't at all.
Because he, in the non-director's cut anyway, he never does anything like that. He is always the one being protective of her, but not in a creepy way. And she's the one who's a bit in love with him, but mainly because she's got her own father issues, I think.
Yeah, and, that's what I took from it as well. Yeah. Is it's definitely a, you know, she's messed up because of how messed up her family was.
And it's the first person who cares for her, and she's a teenager, and crushes and things happen at that age. A lot of issues.
Yeah.
This is the point where Anthony is supposed to tell us that he's also in the director's cut that just undermines everything we just
said. Yeah.
No, nothing we've been talking about. Like, it never takes away kind of Leon's innocence, I suppose. In the situation, but she definitely comes at him more. She's definitely kind of trying to kind of grind him down. Yeah. There's a few more scenes of that happening, and then the only other real thing is that she is a lot more involved in some of the things that Leon is doing. So there's a couple of scenes where she is his accomplice, and she's kind of knocking people's doors, and, you know, there's just a small child outside, and then making them open it, and then Leon does his stuff kind of thing.
Yeah, what's really interesting about that is that I'm totally cool with that, but the implied sexual tension, and I'm like, ugh, no. But I don't care if she's, like, involved in the murders he's carrying. I know, like, the reason that stuff was cut is because test audiences felt really uncomfortable with that burgeoning relationship between them both, and that's why I ended up going into a director's cut years later, which is fair enough, because it did, like, there's enough of it in the theatrical cut that there were times when I kind of didn't, you know, it makes you think, oh, are they really going to go that far? And then they never do, and it's done in such a way that, like, Leon's deliberately keeping that, you know, distance and being like, no, you're a child, and at this point essentially becoming a daughter.
Yeah. Also, he's probably, if he is a little bit, if he's got his own issues, he may never have, you know, it's implied he's had he's been with a woman in the past, because his like handler has mentioned, when you came to this country, you had woman troubles before. Like, possibly someone took advantage of his innocence and maybe got money out of him or something. Something happened. So, but I think he's probably a little bit afraid of her, because she's probably more sexually mature in a way, or at least in terms of relationship. She feels more confident in that way than he does.
Yeah, I got the impression as well that he didn't have much of a, like, sexual side at all, much interest. That kind of thing.
No, so I think he's got two things he's trying to do. He's trying to look after her because he cares about her a bit, and he wants to look after her because she hasn't got anywhere else to go. And he's reluctant to train her as an assassin, which is what she wants. But then at the same time, it's all he knows, so he does relent, and she kind of proves she's bold enough to shoot out of a window during the day. And so there's lots of moving house because she's done something. One is she shoots out a window. The other is she tells the concierge at the hotel they go to that it's actually, they're not father and daughter, that they are in a relationship, and the police are called and things, and they have to move again with the plant and the suitcase, the minimal suitcase.
Well, Leon was not annoyed at her enough for the bullshit that she caused in terms of where they had to live.
Stomping around, like, I can't believe you told people that. But still doesn't, like, shoot her in the face. Do you know what? Can't be asked.
Yeah. He does. I liked initially when he doesn't really know her, he does contemplate killing her in her sleep.
Yeah.
And thinks about it a second time and decides not to. I thought that was quite good. There's lots of depth and complexity to the character. So many films have, you know, little bit of complexity and leave it at that. But this has so much implied. It leaves us to do so much work. And it's all there and it's all provable. It's not just we speculate. It shows you just enough to get a hint of these characters without explicitly saying everything. And you know, it becomes this story of a young girl being trained by an assassin and then bonding between dressing up as characters from films and playing guessing games and drinking milk and doing exercises and learning to fire sniper rifles.
Who did she dress up as?
Madonna?
Yeah, she for a 12-year-old girl in like the 90s, she has a very particular taste in films. All of her films were kind of like, it was like 1950s kind of Gene Kelly and Marilyn Monroe or Charlie Chaplin.
I think that's a very American thing, because that kind of stuff is still, even now, very, not at the forefront, but still very present in, like, American popular culture. Like, it would not surprise me for a kid that age to be aware of stuff like that, even now.
She's also trying to get a middle-aged man to guess correctly pop culture icons, and he can't, and that's part of the joke is, what, you don't know Marilyn Monroe, and you don't know Charlie Chaplin, are you mad? And then he has to do, like, what does he do? Just John Wayne. And like, he dresses up as a cowboy and does a silly walk. And she's like, Clint Eastwood? And it's like, fair. At least you guess close. I mean, but it's a funny...
A cowboy.
Yeah. But it was this way to show they're both a little bit like children and can have fun in between learning how to kill people professionally.
Yeah.
And it was part of this bonding. And they become genuinely friends, and they both get a lot, like, both of them start to have a nice life because of each other, and it's a weird relationship at times, but it kind of works, and that adds to the tragedy of the overarching story.
You can, I think what makes where it goes so sad is you can see the strength of the relationship, the potential relationship in the future, and then it ends up getting, like, stopped short. But I will say, with all the discussion about, like, the uncomfortable sexual tension at times, there's two scenes. There's the one where she tells the guy at the hotel that they're, like, involved and gets them kicked out.
Yeah.
And it's his complete rejection of that, any suggestion of that with the two of them, because she's a child and he's looking after her and all that kind of stuff. But then there's a scene later on where Gary Oldman finds her in a public toilet in the bathroom. And he, like, they do the same thing, but he genuinely seems to be, you know, at least suggesting that he's advancing on her in a way that a grown man should not be.
Yeah, but I think he's more... His obsession seems to be killing people who want to live. Like, he gets his kicks by killing people who enjoy life.
The way it's done is because doesn't he do the whole, like, smelling her thing that he did?
With him, it's a bit different because he's high.
Yeah, but it's just that the way it's filmed is very suggestive, and because Leon never goes for it in any way.
Mm.
When Gary Oldman does that, it's deeply uncomfortable, because the whole time you've been going, yeah, good, Leon, don't, you know, that would be weird. And then Gary Oldman's character does it, and it's like, oh, I was right, it is weird. That it's really uncomfortable and weird. And it just made, like, at this point in the film, they managed to do something that makes you hate Gary Oldman's character even more than you already did.
Like, round of applause him... movie, well done.
Yes, even more disgusting. And part of it is the stuff he does. Part of it is just Gary Oldman's amazing performance.
And sweaty face and beigeness in his suit. Something about beige that makes you a villain, I think.
Yeah.
But, like, at this stage where she's cornered in the men's room in the police station by Gary Oldman, it's after she's trained a bit, she's learnt... You know, handy tips like we start with sniper rifles because far away from the target. Later on, you get better, you can use a knife and stuff. That's cool. And also, we're going to paintball some guy in the park, and that'll be fun. So they have a kind of training, and she gets up enough. You know, she argues with Leon occasionally because she can't get her full way with anything.
Yeah.
And she essentially decides, I'm going to avenge my family a bit when she storms off after they have like a little tiff or something. And she decides she's going to. she follows up on Gary Oldman. She basically pays a taxi driver to follow him to the precinct, where she has some guns hidden in some takeaway stuff, and is going to try and kill Gary Oldman and avenge her little brother and family.
Her plan was the worst.
Well, she's going quite well. Follow the guy. She gets in because she's innocent and young, and then, you know, she follows him to the men's room. She could have easily got the gun out and killed him if he hadn't have been on to her. It's not that bad, Abby.
I don't know. When you say he was on to her, there was opportunity before that to do something, but she just sort of carried them around a bit like, I've got these now.
I thought that was really good, because it shows that even with all the training and stuff, she's still a kid. And even with the hatred she has for Gary Oldman, she is still a child and she's still scared.
Yeah.
And she actually comes face to face with him, and it's absolutely terrifying for, because it would be for a grown man. Mm-hmm. Like if someone killed your family and you totally went like Mad Max on it and you armed yourself up and like, I'm going to hunt him down and kill. And then you actually came face to face to him, and he was someone who had done it a million times before and was completely unhinged. And, you know, even if you had a gun, you'd still be like,
Well, everyone is scared of Gary Oldman in this film. Leon's the only one who isn't, but he never directly confronts him. And even the time where they have a face-off, Leon isn't facing the right way, so it's not a full face-off. But, like, Leon doesn't ever have to deal with him. We presume he wouldn't be scared of him, because why would he? But everyone is intimidated. Even the good cops are like, well, let's not mess around with Gary Oldman's character.
They don't ever have a face-to-face confrontation, do they?
Yeah, it's only after Leon's been shot and he pulls the pin out of the grenades on him, and Gary Oldman's like, shit, and then dies in the explosion. That's the only time they see face-to-face. He sees him only from a distance otherwise.
It's interesting because Luc Besson does the same thing in The Fifth Element, also with Gary Oldman, that him and Bruce Willis, Corbin Dallas, never meet.
Even though they're like the main characters.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's a good idea. It kind of creates an interesting thing. So where were we sort of? We hadn't quite dealt with the climax, had we? Because essentially all that really happens to get to the finale is their lives. Like Natalie Portman has to be rescued. Leon turns up, rescues her from the police department by just walking in, killing anyone, and getting out quickly. And then Gary Oldman is annoyed at the death of his henchman and the fact that Leon has gone a bit rogue and is not just working for the mafia. He's killing people who he wants, and those are Gary Oldman's men. And essentially they go, right, we're going to ruin a kid's birthday party and find out where this assassin Italian weird glasses and hat wearing. We didn't talk about how Leon looks. He like wears a trench coat, he has little round glasses, and a very tiny woolly hat.
Is this one of those things where the script didn't really match the people they cast? It's like, he's Italian looking. That's not an Italian looking man.
Yeah. He's an Italian looking. We're going to cast the Frenchest Frenchman.
With an awesome nose to come and...
Yeah.
But what's great about what's great about Jean Reno is he has the wonderful, like, Lost in Translation way of... Like, kind of not Lost in Translation, the film, but he's not quite spot on with his English, which works for him being Italian. But also his face is so good at the... playing it like a simpleton and reactions. Sorry, go on.
Oh, that he just looks bewildered.
Yeah, and he's got a kind of gleefulness in his eyes. He's playful and yet serious. He's got a brilliant like face for expressions.
For such a manly looking guy, he does a great job of looking innocent and in over his head.
Yeah, and he's so large. He's a big guy.
Yeah, so, but he never comes across like that in the film. Mm. Like, he never comes across as big and intimidating.
No.
But then when he goes into, like, assassin mode, he does seem like the total professional.
Mm. And it spills to this thing where Gary Oldman gets a huge... Because they know how dangerous, but at this point, Leon is. Gary Oldman's like, well, we're going to have a massive SWAT team take him down. And then when Leon successfully kills the couple of first teams that, you know, train SWAT teams to come to kill him. He murders them all in a fun way by dangling from the ceiling and being clever and shooting them.
That shootout was spectacular.
Yeah.
Like it was all in a corridor, and it was a fantastic action sequence.
I was going to say, it does raise questions about how not caring the citizens of New York are about explosions and gunfire.
I'm pretty sure that's quite realistic.
They
maybe.
I liked this. Even through the balaclavas, you could tell the SWAT team were the corrupt cops, like, and they were kind of jerks despite being quite good at their job. And they kidnap Matilda, and they have her as a hostage, and yet, you know, luckily, you know, Matilda tips off Leon that they're coming for him with the special knock. It's kind of weird that the SWAT guys kidnapped her and went, "Where's he live? Is he alone? Have you got keys? Is there a secret knock we can get wrong that will alert him to our presence?"
Yes,
yes, this is the wrong knock you could knock. Ah, thank you, Madeline. Oh, sorry, Matilda. I don't know what that was. Thank you, Matilda.
Picturing that little kid in the red coat with the hat.
It would have made sense because Reno.
Johnny Reno.
Johnny Reno is from France, so Matilda and him would make sense. Anyway.
Johnny Reno, the Italian French hitman.
Anyway, Matilda, you know, can tip off Leon, and they invade the apartment, and you have this takedown. And then the SWAT team are like, "This guy is nuts. He's amazing. He's like Hitman the video game good."
Yeah.
Like, probably an inspiration. Probably like Hitman the video game. And also, I don't know if anyone has seen or heard of Hotline Miami. Especially in the sequel, Hotline Miami 2. There's a corrupt cop in that who does some slaughtering. That's a lot like Gary Oldman's approach to crime scenes.
I think this is one of those films.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's completely forgotten about, but it's definitely a cult.
Yeah,
it's on that kind of level, but
it's had a massive influence on movies and
it's
games.
It's got that kind of like Evil Dead 2, like film fans really know it, but general cinema has taken a shitload of stuff from it.
Yeah, it's a prototype for anti-hero crime movies. Anyway, you know, the general bit at the end is the SWAT team have to... Or, like, Gary Oldman has this moment of, "Get everyone." And then his head is like, what do you mean, everyone? What do you mean, everyone? And then Gary Oldman's like, "Get everyone. Get everyone." And it's like...
Actually, it was everyone!
That's right.
What do you mean, get everyone? Can you emphasise it a little bit more so I fully understand?
Do you want to vague it up a bit? Like, do you mean get all of the police or all of our corrupt police or, like, the FBI? What do you want? Just everyone. Oh, fine. Get Humpty Dumpty, get Columbo, get whoever you got. Bring them.
Columbo.
Yeah. all the police officers. Get everyone in.
The Avengers, the British ones or the Marvel ones? Both, all of them.
I don't know if I said this, everyone, literally everyone. Me and you had to go, like, the whole podcast team had to turn up and get on with guns and stuff. Anyway, so they, you know, they have everyone take on Leon, and he has that clever ability to get Madeline back by shooting people.
You called her Madeline again.
Oh, fucking hell. Anyway, long story short, Leon, through his elite assassin training... which we don't know who trained him, just has a knack for it. He gets Matilda back, gets an axe, that's important, and they cut a hole in like the air vent so that they can dump the plant and Matilda down. And this is where they have the final scene with them, the two of them, where they both get kind of emotional because they kind of suspect Leon's going to die. They could both die, and they have that goodbye. "I will kill everyone. I'll kill everyone. Don't worry about it. It's only everyone." And he does kill everyone he needs to, more or less.
Yeah.
And they go down the vent, and Leon says he loves her. And, you know, it could be platonic. It could be a kind of father-daughter. It could be a relationship. Just reassuring her.
I think it comes across more father and daughter than anything else.
Yeah. So the plant and her are free and have to get out of there. And he has to... What's the clever trick he does, guys?
Gets shot.
Good trick.
He dresses up as a wounded officer.
Yeah.
Very quickly, he gets on the clothes and mask, at least.
He Hannibal Lecters his way.
He does, doesn't he?
Yeah.
It's the old dress up like someone you think is getting evacuated from the scene of the crime.
It's the old wear someone else's face trick.
But, you know, it works. And he goes past all the SWAT team and out to the basement where he can eventually, after Gary Oldman clocks him, get, you know, he nearly escapes wounded as a SWAT guy who's had a medical check. And then they have to have the showdown where Gary Oldman gets blown up with grenades in your face, Gary Oldman.
I was sad. I didn't actually think Leon was going to die. So the film did actually surprise me.
It's probably for the best, given that when Natalie Portman does become of age, they will have built a significant relationship together. Where you go, well, once she's turned like 18, is it all right? It's not all right. But no, is it? So it's probably good that we don't ever get that question answered.
But the Gary Oldman's death scene is one of my favourite kinds of villain deaths, where they realise it at the last second, and they're like, oh, bollocks. And then, like, because he goes through the film, and you get the impression he's gone through life genuinely believing he's invincible.
Yeah.
And that he's going to come out on top no matter what. And then he has that split-second realisation. His entire world comes crashing down. He's like, oh, shit. Yeah. And then just gets blown to pieces.
And it's that classic, I've given you the pin of a grenade that I've pulled out as a gift. And it's like, but there's quite a long wait. So there's a very long time before these grenades go off while he's just holding the pin before he gets to look at it. And it is just, oh dear. And it is sad because we watch Leon. He's seemingly happy. He's about to escape. The outside world's there. There's an ominous looking police car empty outside. The light's shining. Yeah. He's almost to freedom. And then it's just Gary Oldman's like, I'm going to shoot him in the back of the head. But not before creating loads of tension. Like, maybe Gary Oldman can't kill Leon and is somehow going to lose any minute now. And then he doesn't. Yeah. And it just goes black. And it's really effective.
And, the really good point of view shot where it's just walking towards the light kind of thing. And then it stumbles. Yeah, it's really effective.
The camera just falls down slowly. It's really impactful.
With this film, Luc Besson shows like a real knack for just creating tension. And because that whole point, you're like, come on, Leon, you can make it. You're almost there.
Yeah.
And then, Gary Oldman shoots him. It's like, fuck's sake, Gary Oldman, fuck you.
You dick.
God, again. So, just even more satisfying when he gets blown up.
Mm. And obviously the tragedy Matilda has to deal with then is the realisation that her potential lover and friend and father has gone, or whatever, you know, he's not all of those things, but it's messed up. Leon, her one true, like, friend, who she, the nicest person she's ever met, has died saving her, and, you know, she has to go back to school. How lame. But no, she's, you know, she has this mafia guy who is going to dole out $100 a month. Wow, you're so generous. Considering we know that Leon gets 5,000 per kill, we don't know how many he's done in the past, but implied a lot. He must have a huge stack of cash available through this guy. And he's like, 100 quid to have a bit of fun, kid? Now get out.
Yeah.
Well, it depends, because she's 12 in the movie. Mm. Potentially, he could be supporting her for the rest of her life.
I think that's what's implied. Is
80
that it's,
years?
And it's $100 to start her off, I think he says.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That. So it's we're taking the positive notion that he's not. He did genuinely like his simpleton assassin.
He cared about Leon. Like, he used him to make money and everything. But
you know, he might have been doing it for Leon's benefit, because the guy he didn't have anything to spend money on. He went to the cinema and bought milk. He didn't need much money, really. So the guy had his money for him.
And he may have felt bad for giving him up as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, Matilda goes back to school where she confesses eventually to her teacher, to the like woman in charge of the school, that, so my family got killed and I worked with an assassin for a bit. You said you wanted the truth, right? Yeah, so I've had a effed up life thus far, so do you want to give me a break about not turning up to school those few weeks I was off? And then I don't know if the teacher believes her or not, but it's implied that Matilda is going to be back in school, and she plants the plant so it can have roots, and we all feel sort of sad but happy that she's going to have a happy life now as a... What job do you reckon she'll get? She reckons she'll be a lawyer, and she'll go after corrupt cops, or maybe she'll become an internal affairs police officer, or will she turn back to crime and assassinations? What job will Matilda eventually get, guys? What do you reckon?
Walmart cashier.
She'll never really get over her traumatic childhood.
Yeah.
She'll flunk out of school.
All the therapy that she has to go through will cost her a fortune.
Any other suggestions, guys?
I don't know.
I think she'll go back into assassination. In a sort of... But in the sort of femme fatale way. She's the one that you call to infiltrate a gang, find some information, and then murder them all.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe she'll walk a weird line between working for the mafia in the future and having a very good professional career as something else. Maybe she'll just become a cleaner, a literal cleaner. And she seemed quite good at washing windows in Leon's apartment. Which, why wash the window when the apartment looks as horrible as it did?
Yeah.
If there's ever a sequel to the film, then she'd have to be the professional then.
Yeah, it would be really boring if she was anything else. It'd be rubbish. What does she do? She's a...
bin man.
Barmaid.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but there's both... At the end, there's both the hope that she'll get out of it, but then, you know, if she's going back to Tony for the money for the rest of her life, then she's bound to get sucked back into him.
Yeah, but then she's got schooling, which is sort of that implies that she could learn and better herself. I like also that there's comments from the kids, like, who's that kid? I don't know. And I think it's sort of trying to say this kid is cut from a different cloth to everyone else, and that she bonded with Leon because he was different as well. She's kind of an alternative person in a world of, like, sheep. She wore a horrible green bomber jacket, and what I thought was some very nice comic book strip leggings early on. I kind of fancied them. But she's kind of an alternative-looking young girl and smokes and stuff, so she's obviously cool. it implies that she's going to continue to be different to other people, if not a major criminal. But it's a bittersweet ending, and I think that's okay because Leon, he's a hitman after all. He's murdered people for money, and that doesn't make him a good guy. It's just, he was such a nice guy. I feel bad. Plus, you know, his name's Leon. Sounds like a friendly lion. I guess we should do final thoughts, guys. Everyone could have their last say, and we'll come up with some kind of rating. Maybe what plot plant is Leon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any thoughts, anyone?
Well, I'll just say that I've seen this film countless times now, and each time it's always a joy to watch. It's just all the way through, it's just so tense and unnerving and funny, and it's just good. It's a nice balance between a kind of big Hollywood kind of cop film and a more like French or European
arthouse-y
kind of film going on. So it's
got that sensibility.
So it's a nice mix, and the way he kind of captures the city, New York, it makes it look very unique as well. And I don't know, it's one of those hard films because it's always kind of been there for me, and it's always just. It's kind of like a classic for me, really, of cinema.
Yeah, it is. It's very good.
One of the reasons that I put it forward, that I'd sort of forgotten about when you asked me at the start, was Leon, we are aware of, because it was sort of our era. It came out in 1994. And that would be sort of our teenage window there for being high enough in culture to be noticed, and then we would watch it. And I would be concerned if Leon sort of got forgotten about because it was before some people's time, but it isn't one of the really big, big famous movies. It's just sort of famous if you like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's such a solid piece of cinema. It's a prototype on how to do anti-heroes. Like, it's that wonderful balance of criminals who are bad, but we like them because they're good, and we feel sympathetic towards them. And, you know, people are fascinated by murderers and crime because not many of us get to find out about that world unless it's being robbed or something. So it's crime is always, throughout time, you know, crime is what people are interested in. And we'd like it to have a bit of heart. And also, I think people relate to the characters, like a young teenage girl and a sort of childlike man. I can't help but feel like I relate to that. You know, people like these characters because they have so much depth. And also, Gary Oldman is fabulously villainous. I mean, that's maybe a fault, is that he's very filmically, like, it's unbelievably corrupt as a cop.
I don't know. I think it's actually a strength of the film, because all the other characters do have, even Danny Aiello's character, who's reasonably minor, they all have real heart to them. Mm. So you need a villain who has to be so despicable that you just hate, because he's now going to, like, you've got these human characters who are decent people, even though they do terrible things. So you need someone who's worse.
You need someone
to skew the curve.
Yeah, because, you know, Leon's an assassin. That's his job. He kills people, but he's also a decent person. So you need Gary Oldman to be so evil it goes beyond the realm of reality.
You need a criminal to out-criminal the criminals.
Yeah, and they do it so well. They just make him so grotesquely...
deliciously horrible.
Yeah, and he's fun to watch, but at the same time, when he dies at the end, it's like, yeah, good.
One thing, actually, before I go back to Anthony for his symbolic rating thing, is, do you know, in the Italian restaurant where Tony was dishing out the jobs and advice, there was this old guy in the back wearing black, and he looked like he could be the mob boss, head of the family, old guy, but it also could just be a guy who always eats pasta there. I wanted to know that guy's story.
Are you talking about the guy who every so often looked like he was dead?
Yeah, just quietly in the background. Wearing black and being old. I like to think he was the head of the mafia, because Tony seemed like he was high up, but he also seemed a little bit frightened of leaving his own shop. He liked to keep his life simple. I go from here to there. Well, what's the point of being a rich gangster then?
Maybe he's not allowed to.
He's an NPC, so he has to stay there for giving out missions.
He really hasn't got 70 phrases that he can say.
They're all sort of vaguely racist Italian phrases for mafia guys. Hey, forget about it. You want some salami over here?
Hey, paisanos. You're the Mario buyer.
Sorry. Anyway.
I'm going Bob Hoskins now.
Anthony, do you have any more thoughts and rating?
The only other thought I have was, I was reading up about this, and this was the whole of Leon was kind of like a spur of the moment thing, when he just had some time between films and then wrote Leon in like 30 days, shot it in another 90, and it's remarkably really good and competent for essentially what is just a last minute rushed film.
I've never been so delighted and furious.
Yeah, it'd be nice to think
it's that easy for someone.
But I think what's key is you don't mull over it if you've got a short window.
Yeah.
So you kind of just go, let's just write what I like, bang, let's do it.
Yeah. So I think because of that, there was a lot of improvisation.
All right.
I know a lot of Gary Oldman stuff was improvised.
It's all like opening the beads, and I think when he talked from behind the beads as if to look like, to add some symbolism to it or something.
Yeah, which I suppose the improvising just kind of adds to his character and the whole kind of unnerving feel that the film has.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about a rating, and I don't know. The only thing I can think of is it's a Christmas tree. Not because it's like Christmas in any way, but because that's like the only kind of plant that is always there. It'll always be there, like, at some point.
We'll always
have
Leon.
Because that's kind of what it is for me, because it's so ingrained, a film, because I've seen it. I've seen it when I was so young, and it was just so good, and it just remains the pinnacle of these types of films. That it's just always there.
It's that thing you get out from time to time, and you gather around it and have a little watch, or turn on the lights, depending on whether it's a Christmas tree or the film. And, yeah, it's a part of the everyday going on of your cinematic experience.
I should say it's a fake tree, because it never loses, like, its ferns, or gets old, or anything like that.
Yeah, that's good. I like that. Abby, I'm going to pass to you for a final thoughts.
Yeah, I'm glad that I brought up it. I was mildly concerned that it was too famous to be in one of our shows. But thinking about it, it's that little bit older now. And because of the relationship between him and her, it's never going to be one of those films that really... that everyone takes to. And I like that. He's just a little subversive thing that everyone knows about, but not everyone cares for.
There's a fantastic subgenre of anti-heroes, and they are sort of daughters or young assistants. Like there's a whole load of them. In fact, we briefly we did a commentary for the sort of sister film to this with Jean Reno. In Wasabi, where it's essentially, you know, he's a cop for a change, but it's the action hero and his suddenly got a daughter character, and that's the trope that came out, you know, there's a lot more added to that. There's lots of films now that have the young child and the anti-hero criminal, you know, and I really like that genre because it's such an interesting dynamic to visit, you know, innocence and badassness.
The film Leon is a cactus, but a very specific sort of cactus.
I was going to say cactus, damn you.
Ha! When it's like, when you're wandering around in the desert, and you always come back to this cactus, and for some people it would be sort of, oh no, I've come back to the same place again. But for me it's more kind of, oh, okay, well I was lost before, but now I know where I am again because I'm moving for this cactus. And the cactus sort of becomes your friend. Despite being sort of prickly and unapproachable as a plant.
It also could provide you the sustenance of water or wonderful cinema.
Yeah.
So it's a cactus landmark that you're friends with in the desert? What?
Yeah, it's a landmark of cinema that if you come back to it, you feel okay about it.
Oh, it's the funny looking cactus. Hey.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fair.
So when you've gone out into the really hot baking sun that can kill you, where the Transformers movies live, you come back over here and you feel better.
Oh, it's okay. There's the lovely funny looking cactus again. I'm going to go next before Jamie says one that I've thought of and I have to think of another one again. So I'm going to say, I mean, I love this film. Like Anthony said, it's been there for me. It's part of the furniture to some extent. It's like that film that I can watch again and again. But for me, it's like a Venus flytrap. It's on the surface a kind of beautiful looking plant, and within it's kind of crushing flies and eating animals, essentially, or insects. It's kind of sinister and horrible. Like, there's a very dark quality to the film that we've talked about a bit. So it's seemingly a nice plant, but it eats flies. Ugh. Well, like, it eats these little bugs and things, and it's kind of darker and more sinister. And yet it's beautiful, and it's one of the coolest plants ever. Like, a Venus flytrap is so cool. I mean, it's a plant that eats things. No, you know, that's badass. And this film is badass, and compelling, and brutal, just like a Venus flytrap, I guess. So that's what I'm going with.
It's good. I like that one.
It's a Christmas tree Venus flytrap. It eats presents.
Christmas Venus flytrap.
Yeah. With prickly cactus points. Jamie, have you got anything else to say?
Yeah, I'm really glad I finally watched this film that I should have watched when I was about 14.
Sure.
When I was like properly getting into films. It definitely... I think Abby was saying about it being concerned that it's too well known. I think it is very well known.
Very popular.
It is, but with people who really like cinema.
Not these schmoes who watch any old rubbish.
Yeah, exactly. You Transformers watching bastards. No, but it's one of those films that's it's a textbook definition of a cult classic. You know, it's up there with like Blade, the director's cut of Blade Runner, Evil Dead 2. You know, and it's one of those ones that not everyone saw, but it had a huge impact on the direction of mainstream cinema as well as other smaller films. And it's just, it's so well put together. The action scenes are well done. The tension is extremely well done. Everyone is brilliant in it, in their own part.
And apparently it was just thrown together.
Yeah.
Makes you annoyed, doesn't it?
That's actually lost it some points to me just because I'm jealous. It is absolutely, like, you can tell it's one of those films that's just like lightning in a bottle. Like, everything just happened to come together. Like, if this is ever, inevitably when the remake of this happens, it won't have the same magic. You know, it'll just be going through the motions because it's just one of those films that just has everything and it was the right place, the right time, and it comes across like that. And it has a tremendous amount of depth to all of its characters, but it's also kind of challenging. It's complex, and there are times when what is a positive relationship makes you feel uncomfortable and makes you question it, even though it's the two, like, protagonists of the film. And that's really daring as well of a film to do.
Yeah. It's a very 90s film as well. It's very much the pinnacle of the crime genre in the 90s. It's a little bit Tarantino, but it's got that kind of, it feels just a slight taste of the 90s because of the fashion. And it was something that was really big in cinema at the time.
Yeah. And I just think it's great. It's probably, I don't know, what else did Luc Besson do? Like, he did this, he did Fifth Element, he's done Lucy more recently.
Nikita.
Yeah. I think this is, as far as I'm aware, this is still considered like his best film, at least so far.
I think some people would say, like, La Femme Nikita. Because it's very similar, but it's a bit more serious. So I think people might side a bit with that.
But, I liked the levity in this film.
Yeah,
I think and it's just a great film, especially for fans of like action movies, even like, you know, more generic ones. Like, I think there's a lot in here for people who like that kind of thing, and for people who like, you know, odder stuff. Shut up, dog.
my dog Lucy is slightly undermining Jamie, but it's fine.
Lucy.
Ha, Lucy. Why ha?
Because that's another. Yeah.
It's his most recent film.
Oh, is that terrible? That's not a good one.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's his remake of Akira starring Scarlett Johansson. But
don't avoid Lucy. It's not very good.
As for the rating, does anyone know what a Joshua Tree looks like?
It's a film, isn't it?
It's a U2 album.
Oh, that's right.
It's a tree that grows in the desert, and it's this really strange, like, the best way to describe it is it's like a curly tree.
Okay.
It's really oddly shaped, and they're dotted about the landscape, and, you know, you see it and you think, that looks like something from an alien landscape. That's really strange.
Makes sense. That's why Graham Parsons wanted to be buried there. In the location, Joshua Tree, that is. Sorry, referencing an old podcast, never mind.
Yes, you're right.
Don't worry about it, I just like to do it from time to time.
Okay, continuity. No, like, they're funny looking, they look like plants from an alien landscape. And it's fascinating to look at, but at the same time, it's still a tree, it's still sturdy, and it's got its roots, and it's like... It's as reliable and strong as any other tree, but it looks strange, and it's fascinating to consider.
Yeah, it's like the film itself is both workmanlike, very efficiently well made film, but then it's weird and compelling
odd and unpredictable.
To watch.
Yeah.
I think that's fair. Are we all done for Leon? Is that cover the podcast?
Is that everyone's opinions on the
Seems so.
I think so, yes.
I'm just going to go pour myself a rather large glass of milk and then cough it up awkwardly as something sexual is implied to me. I love the spit takes he did with the milk when Matilda just said something like, I love you, and he'd be like, just cob a load of milk down himself.
So, like, the Looney Tunes spit take.
Yeah. And on that note, wave and say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm actually waving.
Bye. I'm actually waving too.